a.m. Joyce, the recording is active?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Would you please take the roll?
Senator Giesel.
Here.
Senator Gardner.
Here.
Representative Cherise Millett is on her way. Representative Andy Josephson.
Here.
Janie Leisk.
Here.
Connor Thomas.
Here.
Herman Walker is unable to attend today. Skip Cook will be a little bit late. And Gary Turner.
Here.
Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum. We have three public members and three legislators.
Thank you, Joyce. Is anyone online other than Dan Wayne? Okay, hearing none, only one person is online. I ask the committee members and our guests to please identify yourselves prior to you speaking so those on the teleconference know that it's you. Today we have scheduled a full committee meeting that we are in right now. We expect that to last less than 2 hours. We will then go into a Senate subcommittee meeting, and that begins at 11 a.m. in the Ethics Office over on G Street. And then the House subcommittee will meet at 12:30 in the same room. Are there any changes or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, could I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Any objection? Seeing and hearing none, it's approved. The first order of business is to welcome our new administrator, Jerry Anderson. Welcome, Jerry.
Well, thank you very much. I have just a few remarks for the committee members. I know that you were looking for an overview of kind of where I've been, and I want to tell you that I've been an attorney for 25 years, and that seems hard to believe sometimes, but it has been that long. And I've basically been the full circuit of both public and private practice, both civil and criminal, a little experience. So I felt like I've had a wide variety of experiences. I was a magistrate in Galena and Kenai for 5 years prior to my experience with APOC, where I've been the administrative or assistant director, rather, for 5 years, almost 6 years before I resigned there to become the administrator here. With that, I'm real pleased to be here. Joyce has been, as expected, very prepared and very well organized in terms of her training, and I think we've laid out a real good plan, and we've talked about that, and so I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we're excited as well, Jerry. Any comments from committee members for Jerry? Questions?
Morning.
Yeah, well, welcome to the job.
Thank you for your willingness. You got big shoes to fill.
Very good.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Moving on to approval of the minutes, the full committee minutes of October 28th should be 2013. I have a slight change, second paragraph, fourth line, and I thought Janie would pick this up, but Metlakatla was spelled incorrectly.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome, Janie. any other amendments, changes to those of October 28, 2013? Okay, hearing none. Could I have a motion to approve as amended?
So moved.
Okay, any objections? Okay, approved. Moving now to the full committee minutes of January 23, 2014. Any amendments, changes? Hearing and seeing none. Could I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any objections? Hearing and seeing none, that is approved. Next is full committee minutes of May 29, 2014. Any amendments? Seeing and hearing none, could I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you. Next would be Senate subcommittee minutes of May 29, 2014. Any amendments? Seeing and hearing none, could I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you. They are approved. House Subcommittee minutes of May 29, 2014. Any amendments? Seeing and hearing none, could I have a motion to approve?
So move.
Thank you. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, that is approved. Full committee minutes of June 19, 2014. Any amendments? Seeing and hearing none, could I have a motion to approve?
So move.
Thank you. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, they are approved. And the last one, full committee minutes of September 25, 2014. Any amendments?
I would know. I was at the meeting. It just that's not reflected in the.
Okay. Any other amendments to that? Could I have a motion to approve as amended, saying that Connor was indeed with us that day?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any objections? Approved as amended. Thanks. Is there anyone here who would like to provide public comment to the committee? If you're here to provide testimony on one of the agenda items, we ask that you wait until that item is addressed by the committee. Seeing and hearing none, we'll move past public comment to the chair and staff report. Joyce.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Under the staff report, the first item is informal advice. And the members should have received the informal advice for the month of June, also July 1st through the 11th, and then the September staff reports, and those were sent out last week. And that some of the September entries I noted with RD advice, meaning Reggie Drummond advice, because that was advice that he had given out. I did have a couple comments that I added for clarification to some of those entries just for the staff report purposes. And then the staff reports for July 12th through the 31st and then all of August will be sent later. They were prepared by Reggie Drummond, and I'm in the process of reviewing the reports and the advice, and we'll get back to the committee on that. So if there's any questions regarding any of the advice, please let me know. And I do have backup documentation in the office. And as I've said before, with the staff reports, they're cleansed of all identifying information, so sometimes if you don't understand what the question or the answer to that question is, please let me know because I can make it a little bit clearer, but I try to make sure that it's cleansed of identifying information, so sometimes it comes across as maybe being vague. So please let me know. So are there any questions?
Disclosures, Joyce.
Disclosures. You have a report in your packet for the first item on the, in the goldenrod section is late disclosures. And as you can see, we have a list of late disclosures. We had three individuals who had a first late disclosure, which means there was no fine. We had two that had second late disclosure, or five that had two late disclosures. We had one that had a third late disclosure, and we also had one that had an eighth late disclosure. So you can see that information there, and the fines were determined according to the statute and our rules of procedure. So if you have any questions regarding any of the fines, I could probably answer them, or I might defer to Linda Lay, my assistant, who prepares all the disclosures and so forth. The second page has to do with disclosures that were filed for your information between January 1st and January 30th of this year. As you can see, there were a combined total of 414 disclosures that were filed, and they're broken up by category, the Senate, the House, and the joint, of course, means that the individual does not work for the Senate or the House, but works for LAA or one of our other agencies. And so what I would like to do is, if you're looking at the totals for the Senate, 134, in 2013, there were 127. And under the House, 232 were disclosed this year, and previously there were 314. And so, and under the joint, there were, right now there's 48, and in 2013 there were 36. So we're sort of on base. In 2013 there were 477 disclosed, and in this year there's 414. And so you can see there's a little bit of a difference there, but it depends on, I think, whether it's a campaign year or not, depending on whether there's some travel that's going on and so forth. So just a recap of the disclosures and to show you what type of disclosures are filed. The membership on a board of directors, the gift of travel, and, of course, the Close Economic Association are the ones that have the most. Those seem to be the most common among legislators and staff and other agencies and employees of the legislature.
Yes, Senator Gardner.
Oh, I did? Okay. I meant September 30th. Okay, thank you. Thank you. January 1 to September 30th. We could probably anticipate for the rest of the year, but... So are there any questions regarding the disclosures? And Linda has included the 2013 one as well for your information.
I have one question, just for my edification.
Yes, Representative Josephson.
Thank you. For Joyce, when there's a late disclosure, is it commonly because your office is getting the other side of it from the donor, or in other words, yeah, do you learn because the legislator has a whoops moment and says, oh, I forgot this, or is it because the other half of it is coming in?
Okay, so for instance, I think you might be referring to a gift of travel, you know, where the expenses are coming in. Is that what you're?
Yes, or where you get notice that there was a gift, but you didn't get it from the legislator.
Basically, because the time frame for a gift of travel disclosure was changed from 30 days to 60 days, which coincides with Ledge Council, that doesn't happen. Usually, it's more that the person forgot to disclose it, or sometimes they've got, I guess I could say legislators have some staff changeover issues or whatever, and then that person that was responsible within the legislator's office did not disclose it. So I would say it's more just the fact that it was forgotten versus waiting for any type of information, if that answers your question.
It does. Thank you.
Okay, Joyce, could you discuss public member vacancies and legislator terms?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I just wanted the committee to be aware of the fact that we have two public member terms that will be expiring in January. One is Skip Cook and the other is Herman Walker. Both of them have been notified or contacted by this office and informed that their term will be expiring, and they have not indicated at this time as to whether they would resubmit their names to the Chief Justice for a possible reconsideration of another term. And so we'll wait to hear from both of them to see what they say. What happens is that a letter will be sent to the Chief Justice. We usually send that around the middle of November, notifying her that the two terms are expiring. She does not respond and appoint anyone until the day after the 2015 session begins, and that's because of a part of the statute that we had a legal opinion from Brent Cole stating that if the Chief Justice provides the names prior to the beginning of session, those that are currently up will only serve for 30 days. If the names are provided after session starts, the two members that are up will serve until a successor has been appointed. So we've gone with that. Also, by November 1st, which is next week, we will be sending out a notice letting people know that there are two vacancies and then whether the two individuals are resubmitting their names or not. That will go on our website. That will go to all the LAOs. That will go to legislators to put in their newsletters or send out to their mailing lists or whatever. And then we also put it in our newsletter. So we have a wide range of ways that we get the word out that there are vacancies on the committee. The two individuals that would be nominated by the Chief Justice need to be approved with a two-thirds vote of the House and the Senate. However, it doesn't need to be a joint session. So I have been in contact, Jerry Anderson and I have been in contact this week. We are still waiting to hear from Senator Huggins' office, but we have contacted Representative Chenault, Senator French, and Representative Tuck and notified them of this process. And then we've also, which I'm going to jump into the legislator terms, we've also talked to them about those of you that are legislators right now that are serving on the committee, your term expires the first day of session. And so we are suggesting that the House and the Senate approve appointments to the Ethics Committee on the first day of session, and that because we have scheduled a meeting for the second day of session, and so we really need to have members, legislative members on the committee. So I've talked to those three offices so far, and there doesn't seem to be a concern with that. So we're definitely, excuse me a second, Julie, did we schedule that for 9? That's great, great. I couldn't remember if it was 9. Okay. So anyway, the leadership has been notified that that they will be The Committee on Committees will need to forward names for legislators to serve on the committee, and it's a two-year term. And these will be discussed during the leadership meetings, which I understand are going to be going on the week of, or the toward the end of the week of the election. You know, election's on Tuesday next week, so sometime next week. So anyway, that's been taken care of. So we notify them, and we have a letter that goes out explaining the whole process. And so I've had Jerry involved in that, and we've taken care of that this week. So that's basically what's happening at the beginning of the two-year legislative session for legislators, in addition to public members on the committee. We have two. So if there's any questions, I can certainly answer them.
Thank you, Joyce. Could you also provide a update on where ethics training will be done in 2015?
Okay, ethics training. We have been contacted by Skiff Lobow in our personnel department. Oh, at least I was contacted probably months ago. And training will be taking place in Centennial Hall this year because of construction going on in the Terry Miller office building, which makes it a little bit inconvenient, but that's where it's going to take place. So we have training already set up for January 13th for what we call agency staff and other offices other than legislative offices. And then we'll have on the 15th, we'll have a new and returning staff to legislators, a 3.5-hour session. New legislators, which is not on your list, we need to say new legislators will sit in on a special session during orientation week, and Jerry and I will be there. And by the way, I will be there for training those 2 weeks to assist Jerry with answering questions and so forth. And then we'll have a couple makeup sessions in the Capitol on the 22nd and 23rd, and then, of course, we will have a teleconference training session for LIO staff and other staff that are not in Juneau. So basically the focus is in Juneau. My thought is, and I was going to throw this out to the committee, Jerry Anderson would do the staff training and the returning legislators training. And then for the new legislator training, I thought it might be helpful for me to sort of lead that a little bit because they're brand new legislators, and then have Jerry and I sort of tag team with me being more of the leader on that, where he's going to actually do the training for staff and all the staff, and then also for returning legislators. So I was going to throw that out for comment to the committee, if that sounds good. Okay. I felt it might be helpful with the new legislators for Jerry to kind of feel how, you know, we sit down and interact. And it's really very, very personal with the new legislators. And you know, actually what I do is I go into the election the state election pamphlet booklet and run off their bios, so we kind of know backgrounds on the legislators, asking them questions. And you've been in the new legislator training, ask them, and Representative Joseph just recently, Josephson, and ask them, you know, do you need to disclose this? You're on this board, you're on this commission, and so forth. So it becomes very personalized. So so we'll be doing that the orientation week sometime during that week. So if there, and then I have one other thing, unless you wanted to talk about the LIO staff.
Yes, I wanted just to mention the December 2nd date that we have with the LIO office staff. They're having their meeting on that date, and we're going to be just doing a very brief overview at that point in time and doing a Q&A. And that was set up just over the last couple of days also, and that'll be at the Westmark on December
2nd. Here in Anchorage.
Yes, here in Anchorage.
Right. Yes, Senator Gardner.
I have a question about the staff training on the 15th. I don't know how early most staff gets to Juneau. The 15th seems a little bit early. What do you think, Noah? If session starts on the following Tuesday, would you be there a week ahead of time?
Oh, okay. TJ's saying it's pretty normal. Actually, that has traditionally been that's called orientation week on the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday for all new staff. So there are a lot of staff are coming in, and their SCIF has set up a variety of sessions during that week. So I would say, wouldn't you say maybe 90%? 90%, yeah, TJ's shaking his head. 90% of the staff is usually there the week before, so that's pretty common.
Yeah.
So now you know, so they're going to. I should need to get them.
Find them.
Connor, you had a question or a comment?
I did. I just wonder about, in terms of the Ethics Committee, is there a meeting scheduled already? And what about the Ethics Committee in terms of the
Yes, through the chair. There is an Ethics Committee meeting scheduled for the second day of session.
What day?
So the session starts
The
20th?
20th.
Okay, so there's a meeting scheduled for the 21st, and then, well, we'll be sending out a notice. And basically, legislators, I mean public members on the committee have attended legislator training because it's important for the legislators to, or, you know, to see the public members on the committee as well. So usually they're there the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Monday night and Tuesday and Wednesday. And you, are you chuckling when I say that it's important for the legislators to see the public members on the committee? Actually, the reason the public members are there is to provide support for the administrator who does the training. If I can be so blunt. If I can be so blunt.
She's just trying to torment me.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, yeah, we've done that in the past. Where
What dates would those be in June?
That would be the 19th, 20th, and 21st.
Okay, thanks.
And so thank you, Connor. I'm yes, definitely. We always have a committee meeting the second day of session, and that's why we would like the House and the Senate to approve legislative members to the committee on the first day of session so that we can actually have a meeting on the second day. Because not too long ago, several years ago, the House approved their members, but the Senate didn't. So we ended up having a committee meeting anyway because we only needed 2 out of 4 legislators, and so only the House members were there. So we're working really hard to make sure that the Senate and the House both do that on the same day, and that was a while back, but that did happen.
Yeah, Joyce, question on those dates again. Since training for the new and returning legislators, the first one is 2 hours in the afternoon on the 19th, so public members will need to show in Juneau Sunday evening?
Yes, it will be on, yes, so, or Monday morning. So it would be Monday. We have set up the legislator training to have in the afternoon because that's the afternoon before session, and then the morning before session, so the Monday before, and then Tuesday before the session actually starts, we do a 2-hour training in the morning, and that's because all legislators, some legislators don't get there till the Monday or Tuesday of session.
Right.
I'm not speaking about anybody here. And then, of course, then there'd be the meeting on Wednesday, which we usually have a full committee meeting, and I'm sure maybe House and Senate as well. So are there any other questions?
No? Okay.
Okay.
Joyce, can you discuss COGL, the conference this in December? And, Linda, you were going to distribute the agenda for
Jerry, before we – I mean, Gary. Got to get Jerry and Gary. But before we do that, we had a sort of a 9 o'clock certain for the people to talk about the new Legislative Information Office building or the legislative building. So is Julie here? Did she? Okay, all right. We'll wait then. How does that sound? We'll wait till she comes back? Okay. All right. Well, Linda, if you wanted to hand out the COGL stuff, we might as well just move into that, and then we'll wait for Julie to come back. If that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Are you going?
Thank you. Okay, so we have a little space here, so I'll go ahead and get started on some of this detail. The conference this year is being held in Pittsburgh, Sunday, December 7th through Wednesday, December 10th. I did check this morning. The Steelers are in Cincinnati that day. I figured somebody would have asked. So you can't go there just for the football game. So we have allocated or budgeted funds for up to three people to attend, and I'm making a formal request of Jerry to go to that. Okay, thank you. Is anyone at this time interested in attending? Okay, I hear nobody. How long do we give them to change their minds?
Well, here's the thing, Mr. Chair, if I could interject. Reservations really need to be made ASAP if possible, and the reason is that the COGL organization only usually reserves so many hotel rooms, and they usually get booked up, and there's been times where I have gone to the conference and have made it into the hotel that's where the conference is, and then there are people that had to be in a different one. So if you're really interested in going, I would say that you should give our office a call. Linda can make, you know, handle all the details for, you know, hotel and conference registration and so forth. So if anybody's interested, I know that Senator Gardner has gone before as
great.
A representative and when you and I were at one. And Skip Cook has gone before, and as well as Herman Walker. So we have had a couple members of the committee attending, and they found that it was very, very helpful, very interesting, and learned a lot. So I would say, Mr. Chair, if they want to go, they should let us know by the end of the week.
Okay. Thanks, Joyce. Will you be attending if two slots don't go away or get claimed?
I don't know. Does the committee feel I should attend?
Janie.
Mr. Chair, I might be interested. I just want to...
Okay.
As far as Joyce, you attending, I think if we do have an available seat, that I would suggest that you do attend to acclimate Jerry and Janie if she goes and show them the ropes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Are you teasing her because of the lady wants to retire, is my understanding?
Senator Gardner, point of order, she's on contract through at least June, I believe.
Yes, I am. Mr. Chair, I'll have to think about it.
Okay.
And I will make a decision.
Thank you for the consideration.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I see that Julie is back.
Okay. Julie Lucky. So you're going to talk to us about the new office building.
I'm not sure how the record works here. Julie Lucky, I'm the staff to Legislative Council, and I am going to sit here and have the architect, Andy Weiss, talk to you about the building, but answer any questions that I might be able to answer. I apologize for the lateness. I've been having a little bit of difficulty with the copier this morning. So I did make some, just a few copies of the floor plan. If you guys want, I'll just give them out to pass around if you guys want to use them for reference. And then should you wish to have an actual copy for yourself, I'll be happy to wrestle with the copy machine some more and get one made for you.
Interesting to see this. Welcome, Andy.
For the record, my name is Andrew Weiss. I am the project architect on job across the street. I'm with KPB Architects here in Anchorage, and here to answer any questions the committee may have.
Okay, Julie, did you receive a list of questions that I... Okay, maybe you could just go over those and then see if the committee members have any questions.
And I didn't know if the committee members might prefer a little bit of an overview before we went into the questions or how you guys wanted to structure it. So,
Please do. Okay, sure. Just an overview of the project. As most of you saw, we started less than a year ago on the project, taking over the Anchor Pub, demolishing that, and building what you saw as the new circulation part of the new tower. We are on time to be complete middle of December, I think, is our target date for our conditional occupancy. There might be some straggling pieces that usually come in later.
This year?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I know. It's fast. I had a lot more hair when this started. A lot. Like I said, the project is moving ahead on time. There's a lot to do still, but we're doing okay. The furniture, I believe, shows up middle of December also.
I believe that that's our target date is December 15th. We did put in the order, and I've been working with Ms. Anderson about what we need to order for the ethics office, and the order has been submitted. I believe there's still one piece outstanding, that a privacy panel. And I believe that you need to work with the architects to figure out what we need to order for that. But otherwise, everything should be starting to be put in place December 15th. As far as I'll just jump in with our occupancy. Year-round employees should be moving in when the rest of the employees head down to Juneau. So what will happen is, as we did when we moved into this building, everybody will pack up at the same time. We'll be sending some things down to Juneau, and then the people who have year-round employment, such as the ethics office, our IT department, the LIO, and the handful of staff that do stay in Anchorage during session, will move in. Our target date is January 8th or 9th, depending on how long it takes them to load the vans for Juneau.
That sounds about right with our schedule. The things that will sort of straggle in as we progress is just all the technology. Once there's some coordination with the with your IT group, so Chariot Group, who's doing all the AV type stuff in the building, has a lot of coordination with your IT group. So that's sort of just a, once they get in, it's just an ongoing process to make sure everybody from Juno understands what's going on and everything is tied together. As you can see, when you drive in the morning, all floors 2 through 6 are lit up now. The front of the building is a little behind just in getting all the lights on, but we'll catch up and meet our schedule on that. I'm not sure if anybody has been through the building, but it actually looks pretty complete now, and I'm more than happy to offer tour.
Jerry Anderson, myself, and my assistant Linda Lay, we went through yesterday, just so that we kind of have a feel for what was going on. And I believe his name was
Kendall.
Yes, Kendall took us through the building. Thank you.
Okay, good.
Are you on budget?
We are. Currently, everything is on budget. Everything, you know, when you take a project like this, where you dig into something that's been around for a while and start over, there's always a lot of surprises. But we knew, having done these in the past, that that could happen, and made provisions for it. So we are on schedule, we're on time, on budget so far, and we don't, you know, we're sort of past all the unknowns in the project that could have happened. So now it's just time to get it done.
And I, if I could interject, I know when we went on a tour of the building yesterday, I didn't realize, and I think it might be important for all of the people on the committee, even the public, but especially the public members, that there are going to be two conference rooms on the second floor. And they looked like they were, you know, pretty good size. And so if we were to have an ethics committee meeting, which we do, you know, as now during the interim, it appeared that we might be able to have the meeting on the second floor in one of those rooms, which I thought was a wonderful idea, to have conference rooms on floors, and there were two there. So that would work out well, because otherwise, you know, well, it just makes it convenient to run back to the office. As Julie knows, when you need something, you just kind of run back and forth. So I thought that was interesting. I know the carpeting was in on the second floor. It was covered up, but it was in. The walls had been, I don't know if they had just been sheetrocked or if they were actually were painted. You know, put on, it looked like painted.
Yep, they're all.
And, okay. A couple questions that the three of us had when we were over there is soundproofing, if you could address that.
Sure. So when we set up the building, we made sure that all the walls between all the suites, and especially the ethics suite, all had high soundproof, or what's called an STC rating wall. So it's more than just your typical sheetrock wall. There's been other provisions put into the wall to help sound going from room to room. The carpet helps absorb sound. We put in high-end ceiling tiles to help sound bouncing over the top. The partitions, the walls between suites, go from floor all the way up to the structure above. So there is no interstitial space above the ceiling tile to go from space to space. So we took every provision we could to separate the suites going down the corridor. There will be, in any project, you know, you have some of the white noise, which is sort of the air handling system that helps. You know, we can only do as much as we can if you leave your door open. There's nothing we can do about that. And we've had projects where somebody says, oh, that I can hear the guy next door, and we go in and meet with them, and sure enough, the door's open, and shut your door. So we feel we've done a pretty extensive job of dealing with sound from room to room, and in the hearing rooms on the first floor as well, everything is sealed up to the deck above for sound, so that's, you know, solid chipboard walls with insulation in between them. All the duct work that goes from the public corridors into the offices has sound boots, so it's not a clear, the sound would have to sort of go like this to get from one to the other. So, you know, nothing is 100% unless it's a concrete solid wall, really, but we feel we've done as good a job as we can do to compensate.
I'm going to back up for just a little bit and talk about the conference rooms and hearing rooms. When the architects designed the building, one of the things that we, as the user, asked was that the public hearing rooms all be situated on the first floor. For those of you that have been in the public hearings before, you're funneling a bunch of people into the elevator so they can go up a floor and then sign in, and kind of moving it away from where the LIO facilities are. So one of the things that we tried to do was put all of the public, the LIO, and all of the public hearing rooms where we'll be having our committee hearings and that sort of thing, and it'll be on level one. I'm sorry that I didn't have enough copies made. So there'd be, basically, as the public came in, they would walk right in, they'd get to their hearing rooms, and then all the offices and other conference rooms would be upstairs. And so the second floor does have two fairly large-sized conference rooms, I would say roughly the size of what we had before, the fifth and sixth room. One of those will be set up for video conferencing. So we won't be doing what we did earlier and having our video conferencing room and the public hearing room be the same space. So if you look at the second floor rooms here, and I'm sorry I didn't have enough time, these two conference rooms would be available for video conferencing and also for teleconferencing. Those aren't really the public hearing spaces, which are located on the first floor. So you'll have a slightly smaller space available for things like the ethics committee meetings, or where you don't have a lot of public involvement, but you have a few more committee members.
I guess I was looking at our executive sessions. Which would be nice.
And correct. And I think that will make it a little bit easier to control for executive sessions because you only have the one entrance as opposed to, you know, it won't be interfering necessarily with public hearings. And if we did need to have an executive session, you know, there's one room into a hallway that really a lot of public members won't need to necessarily be milling in and out of. And so it allowed a little bit more control for things like executive sessions. Or if someone was having a teleconference, let's say, with constituents that wasn't necessarily a meeting that they wanted a bunch of, not that we want to have those calls, but it allows a little bit more work sessions and that sort of thing. On the third through sixth floors, and I just put in one floor because third through sixth floors are the same, there is a small conference area located on those. Those would probably not be adequate for your ethics committee meetings, but I believe the second floor rooms would be.
The second floor room, basically right out here, is probably a little smaller than this space. But the furniture that's been ordered for that space is a big table. So if this committee could sit around a table and work, that's what's going to be offered in that space.
Questions? So I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, you said the ethics office is about the size of this space?
No, sorry. The conference room on the second floor that Julia was referring to is a little smaller than this space. You can see it. It's the one right on this corner here. The ethics suite is these two down at the south end.
Like before.
Okay. Right.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Can you tell me how many people the auditorium will seat?
Okay. Well, it depends on the configuration of how we set it up. When we were asked to lay it out, we were asked to lay it out in three basic configurations. One is a configuration sort of like we're sitting in here today, where we have a large table with committee members at one end, a testifier table, and then just seating like this. And I think we were 120, 130, somewhere in there.
I want to say somewhere between 100 and 150. I'm sorry, yeah. I did not bring that diagram with me.
I apologize to you for that. So that's
50% more seats than this room has, roughly.
Yeah, the room is probably three times larger than this room here.
Okay.
Or more. The other configurations that are set up in that space is for, say, a training session. So tables can be set up for, basically tables can be linked together and set up for a training. That's one configuration. And the third configuration is a smaller committee. And then we have also the testifier and the who's ever taking notes.
It might be helpful. Do you know approximately how much larger it is than the second floor conference room we used to have, which would be the ABC conference rooms?
It's 2 to 3 times larger than what you had originally across the street.
Thank you.
Sure.
However, as my understanding, and I'll just say this because I'm going to jump in, they can be divided into three different rooms.
Yes.
Yeah, they showed us that they can have, the rooms, to make them smaller. Right. So, in other words, if the ethics committee met in there, we certainly wouldn't need that humongous room.
That's two different
rooms.
That's
actually the second room. So, if you look on the first floor, there's the auditorium, which is the largest of the committee rooms. And then across the hall, there is another large conference room that could be divided up into three.
I'm sorry, I was confused. Thank you.
And what we've done with the AV in those situations, that if the auditorium is full and people want to see what's going on, anything that's going on in the auditorium can be basically piped into the conference rooms next to it.
What's the capacity of the auditorium?
Again, it depends on the configuration of the seating, but it's between 100 and, I think, 130, depending on how it's laid out. Mm-hmm. And everything has been laid out to be moved on carts or taken down and then moved down to the storage room in the basement.
I have another question, Mr. Chair, if I can. So it's my understanding, I wanted to talk about the doors. So it's my understanding from what I saw when we were over there yesterday is that the spaces to get in the rooms right now are humongous, you know, very wide, but there's going to be a glass panel, and then there would be a door on there. And that glass is going to be frosted or smoked or?
Yes, the glass going into from the main corridors into all the suites is a translucent glass, so it'll let light through, but you, unless you're right up to it, you won't be able to see who's in the space, and that'll be for the panel and the door.
Okay, and what does that do for noise?
It's not going to be perfect, but again, the noise is really, the noise issue is going from side to side, from suite to suite. So, okay. You know, there is the walls going out to the corridor also go up to the deck above and are sound insulated. So, again, the glass will do what it's supposed to do. It's not going to be 100%. And again, if the door's open, it doesn't help. But it should be fine. I wouldn't be talking right up to it.
Okay, so my understanding then is that to walk into, let's say, the suite where ethics is going to be, it's a door that opens.
Correct.
And then between, let's say, where the administrator would sit, which is a smaller office compared to the large one, is it sliding doors?
It's a sliding door, and we did that to save square footage.
Okay, I just want to clarify that. I thought that was my impression. Okay.
Door? No, it's a glass slider door, and, you know, so you can just slide it shut, and it has a... what we call it, a soft close mechanism, so you know you can't slam it.
And so, is there some?
Which is too bad. I know.
Is there? I'm not gonna say anything. Is there some when the doors, you know, because is there like space between the doors? So is there some sort of a rubber or something between where they're gonna finally get together? So
yes, there is.
Okay.
There's two things on the doors. So a lot of times on glass sliders, they just sort of butt up to the wall. But when we specified these, where the frame of the glass slider will capture the whole wall so there won't be any gaps. Okay. And then when the door shuts, there should be a gasket that seals against the vertical mullion of the door.
Okay.
So it'll help mitigate any sound transfer. And I believe, and I'll have to check again, but I believe in ethics we specified a higher, they had some options that we could do on the doors for sound, and I believe in the ethics. The slider in the ethics area has those where once it shuts, another piece drops out of the bottom to seal to the floor.
Okay, great. I hate to be picky, but no one really wants anybody to hear what goes on in the ethics office if you're walking by, especially.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just trying to make sure that there's some sort of security there so that, you know.
And just so that everybody understands, there's actually a hard wall between the inner office and the hallway. So the glass slider would be in the outer office, so where, you know, the reception area has that section of glass wall, it's just one section where the door is, but then the inner offices, and it's the same with the legislator offices, so the staff offices have that translucent glass between the staff office and the hallway, but the inner office has a hard wall between the hallway and the...
That's correct.
So, Julie, is it my understanding then that... the move for, let's say, this office is going to be in January, or is it going to be in December?
At this time,
our plan is to move everybody in January when we pack up. Now, since you are actually moving from a different building, I think that that date will be based on as when we get our, I mean, the furniture should be moved in mid-December. So the only thing we'll be waiting on is what they call the DMARC. I'm not sure if you know what that is. I'm not quite sure what that is. The IT folks, there's apparently at some point we have to move the server in.
Oh.
So the difficulty isn't moving you in the furniture. The difficulty is we don't want to move you in and have you have no phones and no computer. Right. So until the infrastructure is set up for that and we have to get our vendors, you know, all signed up and ready to go, I'm not sure if we can move that date that much further back because we have to be – we have to get the certification of occupancy before we can do the DMARC?
We should be able to do that. We'll probably have a conditional certificate of occupancy before, well before that. And that's when all that can start. So all the other vendors can come in at that point and complete their work.
And I think that we're probably the only office that moved everything versus other offices, so everything is all contained within our office. And so I think our move would probably be a little bit easier than the stuff that's in storage and all over. So, okay, just curious.
And I'm not concerned about the moving the things. It is more that I want to make sure your infrastructure is complete. So it could be that we can talk about this as we get closer to the date. If we can get you Wi-Fi access and you'd prefer to do that and go ahead and move, then we can do that. The difficulty is the server, when it moves across the street, will have to be down for 12 hours. And so our plan was to have it down while all the computers were on the van because that would hopefully be our time of least use and least inconvenience for everybody. But there might be somewhere where we could get, you know, we duplicate the servers in Juneau. So we might be able to get you Wi-Fi access so that you can go ahead and get moved in before you go down to Juneau. But we can talk about that as we get a little closer to the date. As far as moving your stuff, I'm sure we could get that done before January. It's just a matter of making sure you're up and running.
You can do it while she's in Pittsburgh.
That would leave it all to Linda.
Any other questions, comments? Well, thank you so much. This really helped.
Thank you, Julie.
Okay, moving on to the next item would be item six, the budget. Joyce, if you could give us a fiscal 14 update.
Okay, the fiscal 14 information in your packet is the final for fiscal year 14, which ended on June 13th, 2014. And so you can see that there was a lapse of almost $32,000. And I went and asked why we had $126 and $15 encumbered when really the budget is over, but they explained that the invoices were received in fiscal year 14, but were going to be paid out of fiscal year 15. So why that's in there, I don't know, but that's the way I left it. So it looks like, you know, under all of our, the one that was the carryover the most was under services, which included money that we have in there for Brent Cole, our outside legal counsel, as well as investigators and other things. So those were all areas that the committee did not access a lot in fiscal year 14. Any questions? Should I move on, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please do. I'm sorry.
Fiscal year 15 started on July 1st, runs through June 30th of next year. That's what was budgeted, $252,400. So far, expended has been $47,500, and so we have a balance of around $205,000. I did pull out personal services for the explanation so that you could see what that $46,000 was for. And the little footnotes next to it are on the top of the next page, which includes, so that money also includes, you know, benefits, which is a percentage of salary, and then fixed health insurance costs. For Linda, it is 50% health and insurance costs, and then For me, under a contract, it is a reduced percentage of salary, and there's no health insurance costs. So I just wanted to point out what those totals were. I do feel that we have adequate funds for fiscal year 15, as I stated, which would include personnel costs associated with the administrator position as well as the personal services contract that I am under. So I feel that we have enough money in our budget to cover those expenses.
If you could look at the budget projections for fiscal 16.
In fiscal year 16, I've been in contact with Pam Barney, who is the Legislative Affairs Executive Director. She is recommending a maintenance budget level. My recommendation would be the same at this point. She said that there will be a cost of living increase of 1% that's expected to be approved by the legislature, and then the health insurance monthly rate, believe it or not, decreased by $25. So that was rather interesting. My comments below, as I said, I feel that I don't feel that fiscal year 15 budget will lapse as many funds as were lapsed, or this year's budget will lapse as many funds as fiscal year 14. And my recommendation is that we go ahead with the budget that is as a maintenance budget.
Any questions on any of the three budgets? Okay, thank you, Joyce. Moving to item seven.
Mr. Chair, if we could have a motion to approve that recommended budget so that I could notify Pam Barney that the committee approved the maintenance budget.
Yep. Do I have a motion to approve the fiscal 16 maintenance budget? Moved. Any objections? Seeing and hearing none, it's approved.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Josephs.
Just for my own knowledge, when we've just moved to approve this budget, does that simply mean, as a practical matter, that we're referring to Pam Barney, that she submit that formally to the legislature? What action did we just take?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, if I could answer, yes, that's exactly what that means. This committee would send a letter to Pam Barney stating that we recommend the maintenance budget. She will then include it with the Ledge Council. We are under Ledge Council for budget purposes, and so she would include it with their recommendation when they move forward for the Ombudsman, Victims' Rights, Ethics, and then the LAA budget.
Okay, moving to item seven, the contract subcommittee report. Back in May, we established a subcommittee to look at independent consultants and contractors and questionable compliance with the Legislative Ethics Act. And Senator Gardner, you have a report for the committee?
Yes, and I just want to say, first of all, that the committee didn't actually meet, although we have reached out to committee members to some degree, and we have done some research, and we don't actually, well, I guess we do have a recommendation, but we need to. It's sort of a proposed recommendation. It's not agreed on. Anyway, and my aide, T.J. Presley, will present.
Welcome, T.J.
For the record, T.J. Presley, staff to Senator Gardner. So I'm just going to very quickly give an update about what the subcommittee was tasked to do and about kind of where we are with the recommendations. So the subcommittee was asked to look at a certain statute that was written that includes consultants and independent contractors in the definition of a legislative employee. So there's kind of an issue there, because then that means if you're a consultant or a contractor, you then have to take ethics training, and you're subject to all the disclosures and everything else that employees are. And so there's kind of a mismatch there. So got a legal opinion done, got a research request done, and there is a way and a recommendation that came supported by Joyce, because her and I talked yesterday about the way to move forward, and that really is a simple definition change. So just take the recommendation from Joyce, and this is what the subcommittee will look at, and this is what we've been reaching out to subcommittee members to talk about, is remove consultant and independent contractor from the definition of legislative employee and simply make it its own definition. So properly give consultant and independent contractor what that definition is. So the policy call for the subcommittee is to decide what that definition is, and then to give certain requirements to those people. And an example, an analogy is in 2012, the Ethics Committee saw that student interns and volunteers, legislative interns, were also kind of wrapped up in that too. So they decided to give that its own definition section and apply a limited number of disclosures and requirements on those people, since they're not bona fide legislative employees. So that's kind of sort of what's being proposed here. The recommendation is put these people into their own sort of realm where they're given ethics disclosures that the subcommittee will look at. So that's what the subcommittee were reaching out to have a meeting for. The four members, Representative Millett, Senator Gardner, Senator Giesel, and Representative Tuck,
Excuse me just a second. We were under misunderstanding because the notes here say that the it's Representative Josephson and not Senator Giesel.
Okay. And so the meeting is being done to set up a subcommittee where we can all have a public meeting and discuss the finer points of what the definition will say of independent contractor and consultant, and what sort of statutes and things do we want to put on them for ethics requirements. And we will come up with a recommendation.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chair, if I might add, also Connor Thomas is supposed to be a member of the subcommittee. And part of the issue is that although contractors and consultants technically are already under all of the ethics codes as employees, that hasn't in practice actually happened. So it's hard to figure out what kind of an impediment that might be to people who are interested in responding to a proposal from the legislature who, and they're unaware of what the actual ethics requirements would be for them and whether or not people would balk at that and not bid, not respond if they find out the kind of disclosures they might have to do. So, you know, and to some sense, we don't have a completely clear path forward because we don't have a parameter of what the problem is with our current statute. It's just sort of a philosophical understanding that it might create problems if it were enforced as written today.
Questions by the committee? Connor?
I just want to be clear. I mean, what you're talking about is a legislative change. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
It would be a statute change.
Right.
Mr. Chair, Joyce, if I have a question. So, Senator Gardner, what is your time frame for meeting and moving forward with anything in 2015?
Well, I was actually going to suggest that we set a date right now because four of the five of us are present, and maybe we can set a time to meet.
I think our goal is to have a resolution also for the committee to have consideration by December would be the hope before we all would break.
Right, it's just a matter of
terms would end, so that way we would have something to submit to the next legislature as a piece of legislation or a resolution of recommendation.
Okay. So are you proposing a date for those subcommittee members?
Yes, and for legislators' benefit, I would propose that we do it after the election and maybe give people a day or two. So I would suggest Friday, the 7th. Of November.
What time?
Yeah. How about 10?
The date. As far as I know, isn't the House meeting to organize? House is meeting to organize on.
I could be available. I don't know.
My understanding is the House is meeting on the majority to organize the Thursday, Friday, Saturday after the election.
Okay. How about the 11th? Or 10th, Monday or Tuesday the following week. Okay, the 10th at 10 o'clock? Sound good? And we will arrange to get, I suppose this room is, or the second floor conference room is probably a better size.
It's a small.
Does that work?
Are you going to do a telephone?
Yeah, we can call you in. Yeah.
Monday the 10th.
Monday the 10th at 10 a.m.? Andy?
Yes.
And what's the desk number for you, Connor?
907-443-5226.
Okay, we'll call you at 10. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments on the subcommittee? Okay. Well, thank you, TJ. Appreciate it. Moving along, regarding statutory changes, another thing that has come up is the committee not having statutory authority to collect fines. So we have a legal opinion from Brent Cole that's being distributed now. Okay.
Basically, what this says is that we can levy fines, but if they're not paid, we cannot statutorily collect them. Yeah, Janie, that's right. So anyhow, this legal opinion says that we could pursue statutory change, but Brent identified a past suit, Malone versus Meekins, which provides some caution as to how this might be worded. So we thought it'd be a good idea if Jerry would give a little bit of some highlights of how APOC are able to collect their fines. So, Jerry, you're on.
Okay. I want to give you a little history of what APOC had to go through because they had similar concerns about their process. And they first developed a formal process with the Department of Law where they actually did a memorandum from the Department of Law, laid out the type of forms that were necessary for us as APOC staff to refer something to the Attorney General's office for collection. And that occurred in 2009. We were undergoing a major regs packet in 2010 and 2011. We knew that. And so in the interim, we developed that formal memorandum, and the commission adopted that in order for us to give due process to the folks that came into contact with us either through the civil penalty assessment process, which is kind of the informal complaint method that APOC uses, or through the complaint process, the formal process. And they basically have the same due process issues involved with either one, and that is notice, an opportunity to be heard, an opportunity to appeal any ruling that the APOC commission had. And so they went ahead and adopted that. They adopted just a real simple regulation, which, of course, would not be the process that this committee would use because of that. And the APOC had specific regulatory authority to adopt those regulations. And so they adopted a simple one showing that they could do the referral. They had that mechanism in place from that earlier memorandum. And so they went ahead and did that. And quite frankly, we had folks, including a prominent attorney, who said, hey, I thought APOC would never enforce any of this, and so that's why I didn't pay. And eventually, when APOC did have all of that and had it in place, and it got towards that, he ended up paying and, you know, found out, yes, there were some consequences from it once that process was in place. And so, you know, I think the committee probably has that same situation where they're dealing with that. And I think the major concern that would have to be taken into account is that due process aspect in order to get that, because that's what the Department of Law is looking at. They want to make sure we've gone through our steps. And basically, when they get a collection from us, they go through that step of giving them notice again and filing it and showing, yes, this is a certified copy of the order that went through the commission, and here is the step that they took. And so I could share those letters that were developed. We developed formed letters, but basically that's the process that APOC uses. But it would be different for this committee.
Joyce.
Well, Jerry, if you could explain what happens once the Department of Law receives the notice from APOC and where it goes through the court system and so forth.
Okay. Well, they send out letters. APOC, of course, sends out letters saying, yes, we're going to be referring you to the Attorney General and in an attempt to collect it. But from there, the Attorney General also sends out the letter saying, hey, we're going to file a suit against you to formally get this judgment established. And basically, the intent with that is to be able to attach any bank accounts that APOC is aware of, or in Alaska, the PFD. And APOC, of course, is down on the list of priority down where I think above, we're the second to the bottom in terms of our authority, you know, child support. You can imagine all the other type items that come ahead of an APOC fine that's put to the Attorney General for collection. But they do go through that, their particular process, just like they would with any other collection that from any other agency or judgment they've received in court. They use that same process.
They go to the court.
Yes, they do go to the courts eventually if they don't get collection, but that is very, very rare.
Do the fines accrue interest the longer they're not paid?
We do not have that provision at APOC. They didn't have that provision, and so there were obviously costs involved with the collection effort that got attached, but nothing in terms of the actual fine, because there's no provision for that under the APOC statutes or regs.
And I have one other question. I don't know if you'd be able to answer it, but if the committee does pursue this and statutory change is approved by the legislature, if we have current fines that have not been collected, would they be covered under the statutory change where we could impose that change on those that might owe us money?
That may cause difficulty, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and say it for the record.
Mr. Chair, wouldn't that depend on how the statute would be written, if it would be, you know, effective for fines currently in place and not just starting from this point forward?
Good point. Connor Thomas?
I just want to be clear. So under the APOC provisions, there is a specific statutory section that allows for the actual collection of the fines?
That is by regulation. The actual imposition of a fine is by statute. They have that under their 1513-380 complaint process. And again, there's those two methods, the informal CPA, which is a late filing type of issue, and then the complaint for anything else other than late filings.
And the reason I'm asking is in Brent Cole's letter, he says that, you know, the legislative ethics act is silent on how to enforce such an order. Is APOC's silent also on how to enforce, or is the regulation?
It's by regulation implementing the statute, and that would be the difference here.
So that's where the authority comes from.
Yes, through the regulation, implementing the statute.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gardner.
So that would mean we could do the same thing, because regulatory changes are sometimes easier than statutory.
No, Senator Gardner, we don't have regulatory authority.
No, we couldn't, but we could ask that whoever does change that, no?
Representative Millett.
So my understanding is that we would have to have a statute change that gives us a regulatory authority to do just what you're talking about, which APOC did. The other question I would ask is, when we talk about fines that have already been accrued, we would run into retroactivity, which if someone got a fine under the current statute and we change the statute, then their fines weren't, we can't grandfather in or make fines, past fines, retroactive. In that case, I'd like to know how far we are in arrears with people that have not paid. Is there a large amount of money we're talking about, or a small amount of money we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, I think I can answer that because it's public record. We have a outstanding fine from a complaint that was issued against former Representative Alan Dick. The fine is between $17,000 and $18,000. It was due on September 1st. Mr. Dick has paid $5,000.
So we have $12,000 outstanding?
Yes. Yes, there's $12,000 outstanding.
Representative Josephson.
Yeah, I mean, my own legal sense of this is that there wouldn't be a problem with retroactivity, because the punishment, you can't, the theory, and Connor may know more about this than I do, but you if there's no ordinance that says you're prohibited from spitting on the sidewalk, you can't, once it's passed, go back and say, hey, I saw you do that last week. But that isn't what's at issue here. This is just a collection. The punishment isn't at issue. It's the substantive penalty doesn't change. So I would think you could go back and use the statute retroactively.
And my comment to that would be just the due process that you had built into the process, mm-hmm. whether you'd have to go back and somehow implement that mm-hmm. for a fine that had already occurred. Maybe more the issue than the issue that you're describing.
Mr. Chair, if I could interject, we do have a due process. You know, we do have that the person has 30 days to respond, to appeal the decision, to appeal the fine, and once the 30 days has passed, well, then it's done. And so in all complaints, when there is any type of a decision issued by the Ethics Committee, whether it be in the House or the Senate, you know, or the full committee for that type of a complaint, the person is notified by letter stating that they have, by statute, 30 days to appeal this decision. Mm-hmm. So I feel we do have due process, whether it would be exactly what the courts, you know, or the AG's office would require, I don't know, but there is a due process that we have in our statute, so we could follow up on that.
Yeah, and that obviously is part of the process. You referred to the APOC process. I can tell you just the experience there was that when they did not pay timely, as ordered by the commission, then there was a separate due process that was required.
So, yes, Representative.
And finding by the commission in the APOC case.
So my question would be, do we have a due process for people that don't pay their fines, or do we just have the process that notifies them of the fine, and then there's no due process after the fine is in arrears?
That's correct.
Say that for the record.
That's correct. Other questions? I'd like to make a recommendation. Dan, have you been getting this, following it?
Yes, I've been listening.
Perhaps we turn this over to our legal counsel, Dan Wayne, to propose back to us statutory language. And Dan, Representative Millett said, you know, that this sounds like a two-step process. So your comments on this as of right now, Dan?
I don't have any comments on it right now. I haven't read Mr. Cole's memo or participated in it. This is a new issue for me. I don't have anything to add to the discussion today.
Okay.
Yes, Connor.
Just one comment. I mean, I guess from where I sit, the issue of whether or not they're retroactive or not is sort of a secondary issue. It seems to me that what we really want to make sure that we have the authority going forward to collect the fines, regardless of whether or not it can reach back or not, is the way I look at it. I mean, it'd be nice if we can reach back, but I would say that should not be an impediment.
Right. I'm not sure if I need to make a motion that we hand this to Dan Wayne or not. I really can't make a motion anyhow. Do I have a motion that we hand this to Mr. Wayne for him to research further and propose back to the committee perhaps by December 1, if that's agreeable by Mr. Wayne and his workload?
So moved.
Okay. Any objections to that? Dan, does that work with your workload?
Workload-wise, it's fine. I just need to know what the specific question is, and we can iron that out.
Yeah, I think Joyce and Jerry can provide what you need in that regard. And our eventual goal is to get this before the legislature next session. Any further questions, comments on this subject? Okay, thank you. Yeah, okay. While we're still on statutory changes, do any of the committee members have any other recommendations or suggestions for further statutory change? Okay. All right, thank you. I'd like a motion to go into executive session, and it's for the purpose of discussing an advisory opinion, which is confidential by law under AS 24.60.160B.
I make a motion to go into executive session.
Okay, thank you. Motion is made by Representative Millett. Joyce, could you put the sign on the door?